I am here with Dr. Michael B.A. Oldstone. I thank you very much for taking time out of your day to talk to me.
That's fine.
You had a lecture yesterday at Smith Hall.
Yes.
You talked about the Ebola virus. What are the chances of there being a crisis similar to what's going on in Africa regarding Ebola? What are the chances of that happening here in the United States?
Well, I think the chances are very remote for that to happen in the United States. There may be another case or two, but the public health structure in the United States is so good, and it was broken in Africa, so that you won't have the same kinds of problems. You don't have the same kinds of numbers of people who are infected that you need to be concerned about. It's a disease that occurs primarily in Central Africa. Now it's in Western Africa, and it only comes to the West by people who are sick and migrate out of those countries. And so that by limiting the people who come in, or by identifying the people who come in, and by quarantining them, you should have no spread of infection. And our public health system is an excellent public health system. There are two layers of it. The first layer is what the government runs. That's called the Public Health, CDC, Central Communicable Disease Center in Atlanta is where the headquarters are. And there, the government is in charge of the people who come into the country or leave the country. So as you come in by airplane, or you come in by boat, or come in by train, those are the people who can interview you or permit you to come in or not come in. Like when you travel to a foreign country, visas are stamped and so forth and so on. That's all government control. And so that's the first level of security, and that should be pretty good. And now, as you know, they're starting to monitor people, and they're restricting people from coming in. The second layer is what the states do, and that's the state public health department. And the and then at the state public health department, if somebody in Alabama gets sick and they're worried about it, and this is that state responsibility, public health, to take care and prevent the spread of it. Now, the problem has been that this disease has not been seen in the United States really before. It's very limited. And so these state organizations haven't much experience in how to handle it. They do have protocols, but sometimes the protocols aren't followed exactly, or they don't have the exact equipment.
You touched on this earlier, kind of, you know, this is something that hasn't really been seen in the United States, and this is something that healthcare officials may not be fully prepared to handle. Like, they may miss a step, and that could be incredibly crucial to containing the virus to one person or one area. They've been hosting seminars in New York City for healthcare professionals so that they can properly show how to put on the suits and how to make sure to quarantine somebody. What is the protocol?
The containment, or what should be done for these viruses like Lassa and like Ebola, is well known and well established in the United States. It's well known and well established. So the protocols are there, and they're being followed because people are looking in these laboratories and working with these viruses. So they know how to do that. When we work with these viruses, if we need something to be done with the whole virus, we ask the people at one of these laboratories to do it for us because we can't work with it. But the people who work with it are well versed and well know how to handle it. And the protocols of how to handle it, because it comes in now by plane, by people who travel from different countries. You can get infected with the virus, and the incubation time before you get symptoms. Symptoms are what you feel. Signs are what the doctor sees in you. Until you get symptoms, it can be 7-10 days after you're infected. So you can get infected in Guinea or Liberia, and you don't know you're infected. You get on an airplane to see a relative, and you fly to the United States or fly to Europe, and you're all right. You come off a plane, you don't have any temperature, and then about 4 or 5 days later, you start feeling a little sick, you have a headache, you don't feel well. And then a few days after that, you start getting fever, you start getting all the signs and then the symptoms that people see. So you have that kind of lag period that's in danger. Now, what's happened is not that the protocols aren't there. It's that you haven't seen this. People haven't seen this. This isn't seen in hospitals. So one doesn't see that. Be the same thing if you had a smallpox outbreak. There hasn't been smallpox in the United States since the 1970s. Somebody came in with smallpox. I mean, you haven't seen it, you know. It's not taught in necessarily in medical schools for diagnosis anymore. It's in the books, and you can read about it, but you don't see cases of it. You see cases of influenza and other types of things. You don't see these diseases. So that's the problem. And the problem is sort of awareness and following it and the realizing that it's such a contagious, well, not contagious, such a lethal virus that if you break any type of protocol, either putting on the suit or taking off the suit, because the virus could be on the outside of the suit, you can get contaminated. If I'm sweating and I have infected with the virus, and I'm in a hospital bed, you know, and when my sweat touches the railing of the bed, and you come in and give me some juice to drink or whatever it may be, and you touch the railing, there's a period of time when the virus is still alive. If you're cut, you'll be infected with the virus. So it's the lack of experience, the lack of seeing it. Now, a number of physicians and healthcare workers, some who've been very good acquaintances and friends of mine, have died from Ebola, and they knew exactly how to handle it because they've been handling Lassa fever virus. And they died. And why did they die? Because they became overwhelmed because they were dedicated to taking care of patients. And instead of seeing in their beds 4 or 5 patients, they had 20 patients. They had patients on the floor of the hospital because there weren't places to put them. Instead of working 12-hour shifts, they were working 20-hour shifts. And so there were breaks and a little sloppiness, you know. Now, that's different than what happened at the Texas hospital. And I don't know all the facts of the Texas hospital. I've heard, probably what you've heard, that the nurses at that hospital have written letters to say that they were unprepared, that there were breaks in protocol. Well, we need that information. You've heard the administrators of the hospital saying that wasn't the case. Well, maybe they're worried about a lawsuit or worried about covering their rear ends. You know, we don't have that kind of information. We know that one of the nurses who was exposed got on an airplane. I mean, that's outrageous for that to happen. So the breakdown there. We know that when a patient, Johnson from Liberia, who had Ebola, was missed. Diagnosed at the hospital, and there was a breakdown of communication that the physicians or the nurses didn't even know what was going on. We know he was given antibiotics. Antibiotics don't work against viruses. They work against bacteria. They must have had some kind of a diagnosis. I'm not sure what that was. One should find that out. And he was sent back to quarters where he lived with his some parts of his relatives or friends. And he stayed there. And he stayed there for a number of days before he went back to the hospital. Well, you know, he had towels, he had bed sheets, he had food utensils. When he went back to the hospital, none of that was taken away for a week. I mean, raises all kinds of issues. And the response two of these cases have been outrageous. I mean, the World Health Organization didn't get involved until March, until over 1,000 cases were involved. You know, why did that happen? One needs to look into that as well. their response was poor. Why is the response of Western countries so poor? I mean, we've sent soldiers, but what they need is physicians. Why aren't there physicians going there? You know, there are a lot of questions like that. Why has Cuba sent so many physicians and we haven't? But you know, there are a lot of issues that need to be addressed. Mostly, it has to be addressed. What do you do when there's an outbreak of a serious pathogen that you don't know much about?
I mean, President Obama said in a speech, if I'm not mistaken, that, you know, the U.S. needs to be in the forefront of battling this Ebola crisis, but it doesn't seem that hasn't quite happened yet.
Well, the United States has the resources. The United States has the best biomedical research in the world, though that's becoming dissipated because Obama and the Congress have not been funding the National Institutes of Health to do research into diseases like Ebola. And if you don't know why Ebola kills people, and if you don't know why some people survive from Ebola, you can't make the appropriate therapeutic reagents to prevent it.
You wrote a book, Viruses, Plagues, and History.
Yes.
Is Ebola covered in, actually, I assume yes. It is.
Well, I think if you read the book, you find all the things that are happening now. I think Ebola, at that particular period when the book was written, might cover 4 pages. I guess now it would cover 10 pages. But the idea of Ebola, where it came from, devastation, what were the hosts for it, is all in that book. As is the book also covers panics that you have now. Reading the paper and listening to television, you get a little scared about what's going on, and that book also covers the other panics in the United States that have occurred from other viral infections, which are now under control. So having people reacting to what they don't know and being scared is not new, and certain viruses have played prominent roles. You know, viruses don't respect boundaries. They don't respect races. They don't respect religions. They don't respect males or females, ages. You know, everyone's an equal opportunity victim for viruses. And rich or poor, tall or short, you can get infected.
So what made you, going back, what made you want to go to medical school? What made you go down this route?
Well, when I was a youngster, let's say 11 or 12, I read a book called Microbe Hunters by Paul DeCroof, and it told about all these people who discovered all these events, and from the microscope to yellow fever to all these infections, and I thought, wow, these are adventures, that's what I want to do. Sort of like people nowadays might say, I want to be an astronaut and explore space. I said, this is what I want to do. And that book really influenced what I wanted to do. And then I went to medical school. And in medical school, I found that even though I was good at doing what I was doing, I found that medical school really is training you to learn what people have that are sick and how to treat it. And I found that wasn't sufficient for me because I felt that meant that you could only treat what was at present, and I want to know what you could do to get things better. And so then I went into research to learn how different infectious agents cause disease and how to treat them. So that's what I've done.
Well, I thank you very much for taking time out of your day to talk to me.
My pleasure.